Yes, I wanted to digress in saying that I don't remember what I was going to say in the
You
digress.
were talking about the article.
Yes. That among the early people who liberated the city of Lvov, possibly he came even with the liberating army, was a correspondent. A correspondent for the Ogonek, which was which is a maybe still is a Russian magazine, a magazine, a magazine in Russian means something else, a Russian monthly magazine, and Belayev interviewed Hygge, and I believe Jakob, and all of us to some extent, but Hygge primarily. He was sort of like the father of the group afterwards. But I shouldn't talk about that yet. We are not yet liberated. So this Belayev wrote that article, and I have it. I'll talk about it later. So maybe there I would recall exactly when everything happened to the date. At any rate, after being in the zoo for a little while, the three girls decided to leave. This is not a life for them, and they felt that they'd rather die up there in the world as people than live as rats in the sewer. And so they walked out, never to be heard of again. When our sewer workers came back, they told us their bodies had been found on the outskirts. We don't know whether they were killed or what happened to them. We stayed there in the sewers for a few weeks, when one day two men decided they got a tremendous yearning for strawberries. I had forgotten this detail. I completely forgot about it, and we just recalled it this weekend. How they said they even if it means their life, they're gonna go out and get strawberries. Of course, you know, it was not really so. I mean, they were just being cynical. They simply were hoping that they could make it either to the forests, or they said they had some contacts in the city, and that maybe they would be able to save themselves. Again, the following day, our sewer workers came back, and they said their bodies too had been found. So we lived there. The routine was such. I suppose you would want to ask me these questions. Now you may ask me, or I can just volunteer and give you all this information. You want me to go on and
No,
talk without
yes,
you
yes.
asking? So the routine was normal. We got up every day the same day. By got up meaning we would, instead of lying down, we would sit up. We got up every day the same day. We changed. We pretended that we put on night clothes, so we had like one garment, one blouse or shirt or whatever it was that we would change for the night, and then in the morning, in honor of our people, they usually came every morning, we dressed up for them, and for them we put on the one decent thing that we had. We always cleaned before they came, and cleaning meant scraping off the boards, or we combed our hair, or whatever it involved that we did for them. Their entry was very, very welcome. First of all, when they came down, they didn't smell good. They smelled with fresh air, and that didn't smell good to us. Of course, we were totally ignorant and oblivious to any smell in the sewer. We didn't know that it was the sewer or we that smelled. We thought they were smelling. Occasionally, they would bring a newspaper. They would tell us about the news, and so forth. We also recalled with Mrs. Hygge this past weekend, Friday night, as she was here, and I'm digressing because Mrs. Hygge was here this past weekend. When she was here, as I was getting ready to light the candles, I had two sets, and one set of candles were taller than the lower ones, And as a sign of respect for her, I asked her to light the taller candles and to light them first. And then I lit my candles, and she said to me, "Do you remember the first request I had of Socha?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And that was to bring you candles for Friday night to light the Shabbat candles. That he did. He brought her candles, and she lit, because only a married woman would light candles. And both she and Mrs. Weinberg would light the Shabbat candles. Socha also went to the rebels of the ghetto and brought us a prayer book. He dug up somewhere a prayer book. He was very, very respectful of those of us who were religious. Now, he was not religious in the common sense of being religious. I don't know if ever he went to church or whether he went often, but he was the true religious person as religion should be conceived. And so the weeks stretched where he brought the newspaper that he brought were used for a double purpose. One purpose was that we used it for writing, and Mr. Higger used to write poems, and I used to write my poems. And the poems, which I still have, were primarily satirical. We were cutting each other up. We were just really cutting up everybody's habits and nature and so forth. They were primarily very, very good natured, not sad poems, no.
Can you recite one?
By heart?
Yes.
Probably, yes. I remember he wrote one about me, and I retaliated with one about him. And in fact, I had them with me here last week when you were here, and then I had company this weekend, and I misplaced them. I stuck them somewhere, and I do want you to come back. In fact, I promised David to translate them into Hebrew. I had not, into English. I had not looked, no, in Polish. I had not looked at these relics of mine for some 30 years until the very first time I did it, I believe, was in 73. It was the very first Yom HaShoah Holocaust Memorial Service in Wilmington that the community sponsored in the JCC. And I was asked to speak, and I felt that this being the first community-sponsored memorial, that I ought to memorialize my hometown. And so at that time, I, for the very first time in this country, opened up my sanctum sanctorum and removed these very precious relics from the sewer, from home, the letters. I took them with me to the JCC, and I showed them to the people who were there. I promised my son that I will translate them. So anyway, so we used the newspaper for that. The second purpose for the newspapers was the same as in Europe was all over. I don't know how it's now. Maybe now Europe is very civilized, but there was no such thing as toilet paper when I lived in Poland. And of course you use newspapers. But in the sewer, newspaper too was a great luxury, and we were only handed out a small piece for toilet paper purposes. So this is what we use. They did bring for Higger and for me. I had one notebook throughout my entire stay there, and Higger had access to a little more paper because he was, so to speak, the boss. And this is how we lived. The regular routine was they came every day the same time. When they arrived in a pipe, which was, where they were to make a turn into the pipe, which was coming toward our pipe, they would use their flashlight in a circle, sort of circle their flashlight, and so we knew that they were coming. Frankly, if they didn't do this, we would have known anyway, because in order to get through these pipes, and I never did say how we were going through the pipes, we were crawling on all four when we first got into a pipe. We were crawling on all four. We didn't have the kind of boots that they had. We were on our knees and pushing in the pipes with our elbows. The hardest thing was to get Mrs. Weinberg through. She was a very big woman. She was tall, and she was, as I said, in her sixth month of pregnancy. It had been said later. I don't remember by whom, and I don't remember the occasion, but that when she first came down, people didn't know that she was pregnant, that they thought she was wearing a heavy coat or whatever. I don't know, and I don't want to pass judgment now, that had people known that she was pregnant, whether it would have been agreed that she joined the group. But as I think retrospectively about us as a group, most of us did not know one another. We were from totally diverse backgrounds. There were some very educated people, some totally illiterate, old and young, very, very well-behaved, well-mannered, and some very unwell-mannered. In fact, there was even a person among us who I was told was a member of the underground. I didn't believe at the time there was such a thing as a Jewish, not underground, underworld. I didn't believe at the time there were Jews in the underworld. I still refuse to believe it. But I think what was then considered the Jewish underworld was probably the fact that the man maybe didn't have a respectable way of making a living, and that maybe may have been the only underworld. A smuggler or something. Because a Jew didn't really get a chance to be in the underworld, because the others would have finished him a long time ago. So it was really an exaggeration. Okay, but speaking of the underworld, I don't speak of the underworld as some people do, not after what had happened to me, and by the time I'll be finished, you'll understand what I mean. I think the most beautiful human beings were in the what was then called the underworld, and the rottenest people were the so-called civilized people. I use the term Western civilization in a very sarcastic, cynical way. There really is no such a thing, and I think more people ought to be a little more discriminating when they use that term and not use it loosely. We are now in the sewer. 3 months later, Mrs. Weinberg is... I'm not there yet. About a few weeks later, after coming down, in order to get drinking water, our sewer workers came one day and they told us that they discovered a broken pipe, and one of the water pipes were also somewhere underground. They discovered a broken water pipe somewhere under one of the streets, and that it is possible to go there, and if you stay there long enough, and drip by drip, clear water was coming down. And so this is what we did, and we were taking turns. And again, on all four, we would go to that, mostly the men, occasionally we women, would go there, not Mrs. Higger and not Mrs. Weinberg, but Clara would go and I would go and get water. Now, how did we go? Of course, the sewer workers were very adept at that. We were not. But still, now, so one would attach a flashlight. A flashlight in Europe, I think you have them here. I've seen them here occasionally, but we don't. We have the round one here. It's like a cylinder, right? But the European flashlight, at the time at least, looked very much like this cassette, but a little thicker. And here was the bulb, right? So you would attach it here to a ribbon or a string
to your forehead.
And then you had your hands free and you could crawl on your knees. Now when Margulies did this, he would turn his hat. He wore what we call in Polish a kaszkiet, a hat that has a little, what do you call it? Margulies, it looked awfully funny, and he looked like a corsair.
What's that? Say what it is.
What a corsair is? What is you?
No,
what's
a
what?
Corsair.
A corsair. C-O-R-S-A-I-R. It's an English word.
Corsair?
Yeah.
A
man who is on the boat, doing something on a boat. I really don't know myself exactly. But in Polish, it's called Korsarz, and we call him Korsarz. And until today, his son from London was here this weekend, and when I saw him in London during the summer, I called him Korsarz, and somebody told me he doesn't like to be called Korsarz. I couldn't get used to calling him Mundek, because all the time in the store, we called him Korsarz. So anyway, and so everybody had a name there, and we laughed at each other's idiosyncrasies. One was crazy about being clean. For instance, we were allotted, let's say, like a half a cup of drinking water. No, so let me continue with the water. So we went for water, okay. And you stood there with a kettle. We had a kettle. And the kettle had a long handle, and the kettle was good because you could practically hang it on your neck, you see, and still not have to hold it, but to be able to move around. Would you raise the heat again, please? I'm sorry. You know how? The back of this wall. Yeah. So, a little more.
Okay.
Yeah, I picked up. So, we would just laugh at each other. It seemed that Higger and I teased each other. Mrs. Higger reminded me, she too was educated, but Higger was educated, and I was so educated, more or less. I had had 2 years university under the Russians, and the rest were not. And so first of all, we tried to compete as to who is more educated here, I and who remembers more poetry, and who knows this, who remembers more Latin, and Mrs. Higger and I were just remembering. In fact, she remembered this, so she reminded me this week, and I completely forgot. I am digressing again. She said, during the night when we were caught one night. How were we caught? Somebody was coming from water, I don't remember, from bringing water, and the boots were, of course, totally wet. So she got a brainstorm, and she decided to hang up the boots on the hooks under the manhole, you know, like you go up and down the through the manhole. And she hung up the boots. Apparently, some store workers who were assigned for that area that day were gonna come down to the sewer, and they open up the manhole and there hangs a pair of boots. So one of them ran out, grabbed another one, says, there are some boots there, there must be Jews in the sewer. Well, they came back to the sewer works and told that story. So Socha said right away, you must be crazy. He says, don't you remember how many Jewish bodies were found in the sewer after liberation, for days, for weeks, baloney. If there had been Jews in the sewer, they were poisoned long ago from the gases there, you know. No such thing. They came instead running to us and said, you've got to move. So they moved us into another pipe. When they moved us into another pipe, it was just so terribly cold, and so we were so wet, and we were so tired. It was just something awful. So Mrs. Higger reminded me this week. She says, "Do you remember how that night we curled up there, And you and Izhu was her husband, Mr. Higa, you and Izhu were playing intelligentsia. Intelligentsia means intelligence. I said, Mrs. Higa, for the life of me, I don't remember what that was. Remind me what was intelligence. She says, don't you remember? You would take a long word and figure out who can make the most little words out of the long word. So I said, well, there is such a game. What do you call it here? There is such a game in, here in this country too, but I didn't remember that we played that game under those circumstances. We discussed everything. We discussed politics. We discussed all kinds of things. There wasn't much. The other people who came from Lemberg had other things to talk about. As it happened, Clara used to know Mrs. Higger from, Mrs. Higger didn't know Clara, but Clara knew her because Mrs. Higger's father owned the store. And Clara happened to have known that store, so they talked about that. Jakob and the other people were talking about Lodz, you know, and I could only tell them about my hometown, but they wouldn't understand.
How did the pregnant woman fare?
Okay. So one day, I started to talk about it. One day, two men, went for water. And in fact, it was Mr. Higa's turn to go for water. She reminded me again this weekend. A lot of things that I had forgotten that she reminded me. Mr. Higa's turn to go for water. But among us was also, yeah, see, this is one of the men I didn't remember before. That makes it 17. Mr. Higa's brother-in-law, Jakub, or Kuba we called him, was with us too. His, Mr. Higa's sister's husband. And Kuba said, no, he says, if anything happens, let it happen to me. Here we go, but people willing to give their lives for somebody else. He says, you have a wife and children, but I don't have anybody anymore. Let me go for water this time. Let me take your turn. And Kuba went for water with him. Mrs. Higa also reminded me this week that the night of the liquidation, I wasn't standing with them, but I later had heard about it. She was there with the children, and Mr. Higa went to look for the sewer workers. And as he goes through, as she was sitting there with the children, she saw somebody, at any rate, it turned out there was Kuba, there was Jakob, her brother-in-law. So anyway, he joined us in the sewer. So that day, Kuba volunteered to go. As it happened, there was a bad storm. Now see, we never saw the sky. And we never knew what the weather was like outside, except when our sewer workers were able to come and tell us either today is raining or tomorrow is going to be raining. Or, as they taught us, to watch the rats. If the rats were restless, they said that is a sign of imminent danger, and so we ought to be careful. Now, what do they mean by being careful? When it was just raining normally and the water was just rising, we were able to take it. But then there were times when it was raining very badly and our pipe would fill out faster than it could flow down. Then it was very dangerous. One such time, and then I'll go back to Kuba. One such time, our pipe filled up and began filling up higher. I think I spoke about that at the university. It was rising higher and higher, and it was getting very dangerous. And we lifted the children up higher. We were recalling that this weekend too, all the way to the ceiling. And I remember talking about it. I did remember this incident. I always speak about it. And Mrs. Higa was speaking about it this weekend too. She says to me, do you remember, Helena, how she said Christine. The girl's name was Christine and Pavel was the boy's name. Krzysia. She said, do you remember how Krzysia said, Pavel, Jakub Mulsię. Jacob was the hunchback, and he was a very religious man. And Kshisha said, pray, pray. And I said, no, Mrs. Chiga, that was Pavel crying, Jacob, pray. She said, no, it was Kshisha crying, Jacob, pray. So she remembered one way, and I remember the other. But I'm positive it was Pavel that I was correct. Anyway, one of the children turned for the first time to Jacob and said, Jacob, pray. But somehow, after a while, the water began to subside, and we somehow survived that time. I remember when the sewer workers came back the next day, they said that they did not expect to find us alive, that all the way through the sewers, they were positive the next day that they would find our bodies, and that later when they came out, when they found us alive, they went to church, and they lit candles in gratitude for our safety. So it was during one such storm, of which we did not know yet, that Kuba and one man went out for water, and they did not return. They drowned. The water pulled them along, and they didn't come back. So gradually this way, oh yes, I did tell you about the man who went out, wanted to have strawberries. So there were three men, and here were two men, and the three girls, so that's three, and three is six, and two is eight. About two, eight people we lost through drowning. What I did want to tell you here was that one of the men who whom we lost was Mrs. Weinberg's husband. And she is still pregnant when her husband drowned. It was decided that when the time comes, Mr. Higa would be the one to deliver the baby. We had asked them to bring scissors, which they brought, and there was one towel, one clean towel, set aside always for the delivery time. And when the time came, she was incidentally an absolutely fascinating woman. She was illiterate. She really couldn't read and write. But she must have been a very brilliant woman. Had she been educated, God only knows what she would have been. She was very, very clean and very, very bright and very strong and very refined and very patient and quiet. And when she went into labor, she did not open her mouth. We all knew, this we learned long ago, that when you are with a group or with a person or in whatever circumstances during the Holocaust, you never complain. You suffer, you are in pain, you are hungry, you are tired, you are sleepy, but you never express it. Because you never know how the other person or persons will react. And speaking of collaborators, of denouncers, you never know. Suppose the other party at whose mercy you are should decide, well, I've had enough of you. Or should the people, the Gentile people decide, no, we cannot afford the kind of luxury to have here somebody who is complaining. You at all times had to put up a brave face, even if you were not. And so that we learned long ago. Mrs. Weinberg never complained if she was hurt or whatever. But this I didn't say until now. The Weinbergs had a child. They had a daughter. I believe their daughter was 4 years old when prior to the liquidation, and they had made a contact with a Christian man to take that girl into hiding, and some kind of a deal that should they survive, they will of course remunerate this person very generously, and so forth. And so the only luxury. That Mrs. Weinberg had, or the only escape, throughout the time in the sewer, was talking about this child, and where she is, and what she is doing, and what it will be like when we survive, when she survives, And one thing we always did is imagine what we will do when we come out, and when we survive, and when we see, and when we meet, and when the world finds out, and when we live again. Always we did dream endlessly about what it will be like at that time. So this was the only luxury. When it was discovered that her husband drowned, again without a word of complaint, what she later did was cry a lot, quietly, but never anything more than that. She cried silently, and mostly to me. The reason being that Clara and Mundek were already a couple. The Higgers were a family. The only three that was sort of unattached and you know, each with her own sorrows were Babcia, the grandmother, and Mrs. Weinberg, and I. And now comes the time for her for childbirth. She is not saying a word, not a cry, not a peep, nothing. And yes, she gave birth, and Mr. Higger delivered the boy. He took a pair of scissors and cut the umbilical cord. I remember them discussing beforehand. I was young, and they sort of, you know, in those days you didn't discuss these things, so they eliminated me. What would I know? But Mr. and Mrs. Higger and Mrs. Weinberg and occasionally Socha would discuss what and how they will do when the time comes. And so the baby, you still have time. The baby was born, they cut the umbilical cord, and without saying a word, if it was ever decided beforehand what was going to be done with the baby, I was not in on it, nor was anybody else. The only people who may have been in on the decision may have been Mrs. Weinberg and Mr. Higger, or Mr. and Mrs. Higger and Socha. I cannot tell. I never inquired. All I know was that without saying a word, the baby, a very healthy, big, large boy, was born. He was wrapped in the towel. Nothing was done with him. No, he was not destroyed. He was not thrown into the river. Nothing. The only thing that was done was what was not done. He was not fed. This I was to understand was the wish of the people who were saving us. That there was no way, under any circumstances, to take care of an infant in the sewer, not to feed an infant, and most of all, to allow ourselves the luxury of an infant's cry in the sewer. If at any time Pavel, the four-year-old, started to cry, he cried very rarely because he had learned long ago in the ghetto not to cry, but regardless what, a four-year-old can only control himself so much. So there were few times when he wanted to cry, and so this was standard. His father would close his mouth with his hand and not allow him to cry. But with an infant, of course, you couldn't do that. And so the infant did not live because the infant did not receive any nourishment.
Didn't he cry though for not being hungry?
This is all that happened. Then after she gave birth, things went back to normal. This was the first time I saw Mrs. Weinberg not pregnant. And so the baby was gone. A little later, again, I don't remember the exact date. I think if I go back to my writings, I would find more or less the time. Well, let me go back. Excuse me, a digression. While we were there, of course, we all had lice. Our clothes were full of lice, and it was a daily routine that we deloused ourselves and one another. Mrs. Krieger was delousing the children most of the time, although the children were already adept at doing that themselves, especially Christine. She could do the larger lice very easily. And we even fed the lice to the rats, you know. Babcia, in the beginning, she was okay, like one of us. She was fed, and she would tell stories.
Okay.
But then, when her son was one of those who drowned, no, her son didn't drown. I'm sorry. He was one of those who went out to make contact. And his body was later found. He was killed. She began to deteriorate. She had a daughter somewhere. I think she even had a daughter somewhere in America. I don't know. And then she just gradually deteriorated. And then one day I came over to delouse her. To delouse her, and she barely moved, and she just fell asleep that way. And so when the sewer people came, when Soha came, he said to just, they said they will never come into the sewer if there's a dead body with us. So if anything happens to any of us, they said to dispose of it by letting it go with the water, but never to keep it. So this was the order, and their orders were always fulfilled. Soha really acted like the leader, and Wroblewski, the second man, Stefan Wroblewski, he followed him.
Pardon? Why wouldn't they come down?
I really don't know. So we let her body flow away, and thus it was the youngest and the oldest among us who died a natural death in the sewer, the baby who was born there and the grandma. I mentioned before the orders of which they always gave us. They were orders about everything. I mentioned they were how we should conduct ourselves. They were very concerned about morality in the sewer, very concerned that we don't hurt one another. They set down the rules that among us, Mr. Higger is sort of the chief, the ruler, when they are not there, that we must respect one another, that we must not torture one another. They were very careful to emphasize, to specify that the girls be treated correctly and properly, and most of all, that the children be given the best of care. To the extent that one time when little Pavel became sick, his throat hurt him, Soha decided that the only thing, the best thing to cure him would be raw eggs. And so he returned the same day. I thought it was the next day, and I used to talk about it in the past about the next day. But this past weekend, Mrs. Higger reminded me that he returned the same day. But she did agree with my recollection. That he tied two raw eggs into a kerchief, and the kerchief around his neck so they wouldn't break. And this is how he came crawling into the sewer with the two raw eggs for baby Pavel so that he would get well. They cared for our physical well-being, of course. The food that we got was the regular staples. However, they remembered that Jews do not eat bread on Passover, on Pesach. So one day, Socha told us that the next morning, they are going to come with a wagon, horse and wagon, over a certain manhole, and they specified which one it was going to be. And they wanted the men to be there waiting for them. And they were going to throw in through the manhole a wagon full of potatoes. And so the men went there, and sure enough, there they came, and suddenly some potatoes began coming down the manhole. So they gathered up those potatoes, and after several trips from that manhole, they brought them out all to our sewer. We ate them for Passover, we ate them later on, and the rats discovered them and ate them too. And of course, we couldn't afford to discard any of them. So again, we were recalling that this week, and we were first eating the potatoes which were started up by the rats, or those which were rotting in the water, and left the good ones for later. By the time we were finished, they were all rotten and all eaten, but we ate them all. They took out our laundry once a week, up for their wives to wash and iron. And they brought back, they took them out on Friday and brought them back on Monday, washed and ironed. Each one of us had one change of clothing, but I had a handkerchief. And I always talk about that handkerchief because I still have it. It's a green, I had it with me here last week. It's a green handkerchief, a small with a border. And the way we were cooking, was on a kerosene, I don't know what you call, we called it a primus. As you put kerosene in and you light it, and the usual cooked meal was a huge pot of soup into which everything went, and Mrs. Weinberg was in charge of cooking. She was the cook.
How did you cook? You had a hot plate or sterno?
No, I just said it's a kerosene kind of thing, a primus. I don't know what you call it. It's customary in Europe in those days. Every household had it. We didn't have electric stoves or any such thing. But here, it's possibly they had them too. So anyway, that primus served not only for cooking purposes or heating, warming ourselves, but if somebody washed something in the sewer, this is where we dried it. And I washed my handkerchief quite often. So I would ride it near there. One time it caught on fire, so I'll show you the holes in this handkerchief. They're still there. I had it with me in the JCC that day. I brought it out with me. I also, I remember I had two blouses. I don't remember what they looked like, but I remember I had two blouses, and the only reason I remember is because of a certain characteristic of mine which unfortunately still persists. And what is it? I was always interested in clothes, a typical woman, but my brother claims more than the typical woman. In fact, when my brother met my future husband, my boyfriend, I introduced them and we were going to get married. My brother forewarned my husband to be aware that I love clothes, and that he better watch the checkbook. I always liked clothes, yes, and I remember that during the Holocaust in general, and during this, and even during my stay in the sewer, and I was telling that story to my daughter for the first time this week. I don't know how it came up. That when I was really down, when my spirits were low, really down, and I ran out of ideas or thoughts or whatever, and I needed an uplift. First of all, I would think about clothes I would design clothes in my mind and think about colors and fabrics and so forth and what life will be like after liberation. Okay. But right there, immediate in the sewer, I had those two blouses. So I would say to myself, well, Monday I'm wearing this and Tuesday that and Wednesday that and Thursday that. And then I decided to wear every day the same and to keep one only for the special occasions. Especially later on when the Germans began to retreat and the Russians were coming forward. And like, for instance, we remember very well when Stalingrad was recaptured by the Russians. And we knew that that may be the beginning of the end, even though we're not as convinced as, of course, history has proven it to be. So our sewer workers came down the following day with the news and with some vodka. And truly, this was the very first time, and I think the only time in my life when I was drunk. All I had was a sip. But I remember crying, laughing, and I remember feeling awfully funny. But it was a holiday, it was a party. And they insisted that we drink. In fact, they had brought down vodka several times because they felt our bodies need them to kill the germs, whatever that meant. So this was the party, and I remember from that